okay, one of one and or Priya, the guru, Shiksha guru, Diksha guru, this guru, that guru, Chaitya guru, Jagat guru, there are all these terms. And then there is this, for instance, discussion now, which has been going on for so many decades. What is it called? I was never interested in this, I don't even remember the word. Funny. Anyway, the idea that we all the devotees now who take initiation are actually disciples of Prabhupada, because no one else is qualified, so therefore it's a special exception to the rule, so to speak, of disciples taking disciples and so on. So, what am I thinking about this? What is my opinion? Are you one of those? Or are you one of us? Again, I don't even... And it's going like 30 years back since this debate, and among other debates have been going on, sometimes heavily, with fights over property. I mean, they're in Bangalore and court cases. But well, I mean, I said it here, I guess, that yes, Srila Prabhupada is my Shiksha guru. He's not my Diksha guru because he was not the one conducting that ceremonial function of Harinam initiation for me, where I promised before Sri Sri Gonitai and the devotees and my Diksha guru to take up this chanting and serving this Harinam, which I did, and I say I am still doing. So, yeah, so the one who gave me that Diksha was Harikesh, Sri Harikesh Swami back then. Hari, as he calls himself now. And, well, I mean, he is my Diksha guru. But then at that time, he was also my Shiksha guru. The instructing guru, not just the initiating guru, which I then see more and more as a kind of priest function at a ceremony, like you have a priest doing the fire sacrifice, things like that. Here, I am the witness, and I'm that guru who witnessed your initiation into this, your dedication to the service of Krishna. And that is, of course, an honorable position. But then Prabhupada describes that, and we learned, of course, that often the Diksha Guru is also then the Shiksha Guru. So we sometimes tend to mix them up. And sometimes we took it, and I think that is, in my opinion, maybe the error we did. We took the Diksha Guru to be more important than the Shiksha Guru. it was like, you know, when you do that initiation, it's like plugging yourself into the wall of the disciplic succession that leads back to Krishna. That's the only connection you have to Krishna. So if you don't do that, then you're not really a devotee. And I remember when I asked Hare Krishna back then, spring 78, if I can become your disciple. And he said yes, and then on the initiation ceremony he gave a speech there saying that this relationship, that it's there when you and your heart accepts it. So it's not depending on a ceremony, which we sometimes talk about still today with disciples. But yes, there was something right there. And yes, I mean, we were all young. My guru then wasn't even 30 yet, I think, or just about 30. Had been there in that movement for 7 years, 8 years or something, or even less. So, I mean, there were differences among those 11, you know, this. But we were all young and neophyte. But yes, we really, I would say the very most of us, as others, otherwise you didn't even join, did some work on building up Prabhupada's movement. Although some of us understood very well the philosophy behind it, what it's all about, and others thought, you know, join these Hare Krishnas because they have good food and get away from drugs and I'd get used to the rest. I mean, we had such people joining back then. But then, yes, this is what I say here. And you take it as you may and give your response, agree or disagree. But the main purpose of the person we call guru is to give knowledge, to guide and help and assist, and in that way serve the disciple by helping that disciple on their ways back to Godhead. And I also understood it, and we are discussing it, some of us these days, back and forth, and sometimes getting back to the topic, that a Madhyabandikari can be guru, even a Kanishtadikari, someone said, can be guru, according to Prabhupada and the Shastra. You don't have to be an Uttamadikari, a super perfect, pure devotee who is above, entirely above the modes of nature. And you know, to become like that in like 7 years or so, when you are a young hippie in the 60s of America or wherever, Germany, or mainly those countries around there, it's not easy. But still, we treated our gurus that way, and we were taught almost, at least I was being taught that, you know, your guru, all these gurus, these 11, they are Uttamadikaris, they're perfect. So, and we don't need to get into that and what happened then and what we learned from it. Well, that's what I'm trying to focus on here, what we learned from history, can learn. Well, I said, yes. The Shiksha Guru, instructing Guru, is the most important. Not because of some magic position thing of being in a physical body right now, which of course helps, but that the Guru, first of all, as the first one, should teach the disciple to transcend. That, yes, I am here giving some instruction according to my capacity. I'm not perfect. I am what I am, and I can help you to get as far as I've got. And then there are, of course, others who can lead you much further. And I will be happy to point you to someone, some of those. In other words, it's not a prestigious position of power and whatever, even profits, as we sometimes say. It's just a humble guidance and not begging for money or this and that, comforts of different kinds of services. And you know, when they asked Prabhupada, just before he left this world, Lila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, what shall we do now? Who shall be guru after you? And then Prabhupada said, all of my disciples can be guru when they become qualified for it. And that statement may seem very vague and mystical, whatever, but if you think about it, it's very clear. You are right now not qualified. Or are you? Well, each one of you can be qualified, and when you are, you can be guru. In other words, you can teach others. In other words, you can help each other to the extent, to the level, which he then also said elsewhere, where you are now. And the way I see it, it's of course. And then the one who acts then as guru, I'm talking about instruction, instructing here, again, just being there. So I wouldn't say father figure, because if it can become a lot of projection, idealization, iconization, where you just, it's more of group psychology, right? Where people need such a figure, a perfect one, and they project their, oh, whatever ideas they have on such, on that poor person. Rather than just, you know, here we are, and how about this, how about that, and get some guidance, and this is what I learned from my guru, and whatever is above what I know, you can get from him. Read his books. And I have read them, and I can relate to those books. So in this way, it's natural, it's nice. We don't need more than that, I would say. And I remember having this discussion with Srila Jayapatak Swami, me and him alone in a room back in, what was it? 98 or 97, I don't remember, in Alachua, Florida. We were talking about this, and I mean, at least he didn't cry out loud when I suggested this, that the most important role of the guru is not to sit on the Vyasasana and be a representative of God and receive offerings and services, but as the one who is a guide. And teacher. And I know, I mean, I was in China. This was in 2009, I think, in Beijing, and ended up in the room as a journalist, actually, Western journalist, when the most bestseller author in China at that time, Yu Dan, who then later came to Sweden to introduce her book, latest book. Well, that's what she did there. Her latest book, which was about Tao philosophy, explained from a woman's point of view, which was quite uncommon or a new thing. So she became big. It was on all the billboards in Beijing for books about philosophy. That's China. And so she was signing people who had stood in the line 5 hours. And to get to Beijing, I sat in trains for 5 hours just to get that book signed. That's how Chinese are. They liked it so much. And that's why we also, at least at that time, clearly saw, because even the government people read her books, that classical Chinese philosophy, Confucian thinking, the way, the Tao, balance, harmony in society, and also between other societies globally, is picked up more and more by the Chinese government. Naturally so, because that's their culture. And they, some of them told me that, you know, our thousands and thousands of years old culture doesn't get destroyed by 100 years of Western influence, which of course communism and all that was. So anyway, there she is, signing, piles of people, and all of a sudden an old man, humble old man, comes in, simple clothes, and she stopped everything. She went out there, I have it on video actually, the whole thing stopped, went out of her place, went up to him, embraced him, and I think they were crying both, and treated him with the utmost respect, sitting down, talking there with him, and everyone else just stood there looking. And it was her teacher from when she was a university student. That's culture, that's guru. Well, I met her colleague, also famous television celebrity in China, and I asked him what his life's mission was, and he said it is to bring about friendship between China and India on the cultural and philosophical level. I said, well, you know, that's what I also feel or felt at that time. Was my mission, and is probably Sweden, China, India, some connections there too, in that triangle. So yeah. There is hope. Because now they are both in bricks there and trying, it seems like someone is trying to bring about a win-win solution rather than world dominion of the empire. So let's see, pray, hope. But yeah, we're talking about Guru then, this humble man. He was far, far from one of those that you sometimes see coming into the room in India. Sometimes they have lots of golden rings and this and that, and servants coming after them, fanning them with jacktail whisks. And I mean, it's just different culture. And I mean, I've been living with that Indian version of it most of my life, and I'm used to that. But I had to learn to tolerate certain things, which I never really liked about India, like the caste system that we discussed yesterday. But also those kind of big, big gurus, you know, with piles of Rolls Royces and I'm God, or to be worshipped as good as God. So now you bear your offerings to me, and that is same as bearing them to God. And yes, I saw it, although slightly disguised, but sometimes not very well, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not by the founder Srila Prabhupada, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami. He was an emblem of humility and simplicity, although yes, his disciples wanted to make nice rooms for him and all that, and cook real nice food. But that was out of devotion for him and appreciation. And he accepted some of that, but not, you know, buy me cars and jewelry. He said, use all the money to print books and spread this knowledge about our relationship to God and how everyone can live happily in love of God and each other. So yeah, that's what we are trying to serve.